regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program. We're going to be talking about a couple of developments in New Mexico and Virginia over the last 24 hours. We're going to be talking with Zach Ford from the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association about two bills. And New Mexico's legislative session comes to an end this Thursday at noon Mountain Time. This is a 30-day, supposed to be a budget session, but they're doing a lot of stuff outside of the budget, including SB 17, which is a ban on all gas-operated semi-automatic centerfire firearms. Basically, every, you know, modern sporting rifle on the market. This bill is passed out of the Senate, over on the House side, cleared one House committee, and then the House Judiciary Committee holding a hearing on Monday. In fact, let's just get the latest from Zach, and then after we talk with Zach Fort, we'll get you updated on what's going on in the Commonwealth of Virginia, where there have been some major developments as well. Take a look and a listen. Well, Zach, after a late night, I appreciate you joining us early this morning, New Mexico time. What can you tell us? What happened in the House Judiciary Committee on Monday evening and Tuesday morning?
So I guess it was really kind of earlier this morning. You know, the committee hearing last night of the House Judiciary Committee didn't get started till almost midnight. They had a bunch of bills. You know, we're late in the session. We've only got, I think by the time when this airs, about 48 hours left to go in the 2026 New Mexico legislative session. So, you know, they're working late nights right now. But what happened last night was basically, you know, Senate Bill 17 advanced at its first House committee, the House Commerce and Economic Development Committee, on a really close 6-5 vote. This was the second committee. It would be the final committee stop before going to the floor. So last night they brought it up in the committee. Basically, there were a number of amendments that had been suggested to the bill, both kind of friendly and unfriendly per the sponsors. And the committee decided that given the hour of the night that they still actually had several more bills to go that they needed to listen to, that they were not going to be voting on a Senate Bill 17 last night. That doesn't mean the bill is dead yet. The committee could still meet again before the end of the session. But I will say the hill for this bill to get out of the committee got steeper because these are pretty substantive amendments that would need a lot of review before the committee would feel comfortable voting on the bill.
Okay. And of course, if you amend this bill, then it's not what passed out of the Senate, right?
So that means it would have to stop. That is correct. You're exactly correct. So if they were to amend the bill, pass it out of the committee, pass it on the House side, it would then go back to the Senate side for reconciliation, basically, where to make sure the Senate ratifies the changes that were made on the House side. So this bill would theoretically at this point in time have three votes still to go on it with about 48 hours to go. Like I said, nothing is done yet. Nothing is dead yet. So we're not taking our foot off the gas in any ways. Yeah. But last night, you know, getting them to realize they couldn't vote on that bill last night was a big step forward for us right now.
And as I understand, I mean, there were a lot of opponents of SB 17 who showed up in Santa Fe to make their objections known.
Yes, there were quite a few people there. The room was packed with people at midnight. The room was packed with there were a lot of FFLs from all over this state, you know, from down south, up north in the corners. They came from all over because a lot of the FFLs know that if Senate Bill 17 passes, they will be out of business. This is their livelihood on the line. They showed up. We appreciate that. You know, NMSSA, we were there too. There were a lot of individual gun owners who were concerned about this, who were willing to make that drive up to Santa Fe. And also, you know, we talk about people making the drive to Santa Fe. You know, Santa Fe is a very liberal city, to say the least. But at the same time, there are a lot of really good gun owners who live in Santa Fe who show up to these hearings every single time. You know, we say they live behind enemy lines, so to speak. But, you know, there really are some awesome, dedicated gun owners in Santa Fe who, you know, for them, it's a short drive over to the Capitol, who are there at all these hearings. So huge shout out to those guys for, you know, showing up consistently, even in a place that doesn't always respect their rights.
Absolutely. Now, can we talk about some of these amendments? You said they were both friendly and unfriendly amendments.
Public has not seen all of the amendments. We do know there are some related to the custody of the form 4473. The bill basically presupposes that at any point in time, the state can go and inspect form 4473 that the dealer records. So the bill kind of presupposes that the state can do that. However, you know, that's not necessarily the case. These records belong to the ATF. They are not state records. You know, the state would effectively need to get some kind of warrant ignore it the way they currently do to view these records, which then kind of doesn't jive with the rest of the bill that there's the dealers are supposed to make these records readily available for state inspection at any point in time, 24/7. So that was one of the amendments that we know that was there. I think there's also some potential conflicts with the way the Pawn Shop Act in New Mexico works and things like there, because, you know, a lot of FFLs are pawn shops in the state of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of technical things that the sponsors didn't even necessarily say were unfriendly amendments. You know, I do want to say it's a huge shame that the Senate passed this bill without even considering this stuff. I mean, in New Mexico, historically, the Senate was supposed to be the deliberative body that really took things seriously. And instead, you saw half an hour of debate, people just passing stuff through, rubber stamping is no amendment, no substantive amendments. They kind of got on, off a side trail on IPRA, which is New Mexico's Public Records Act. So it's really a shame that what's happened to the Senate in New Mexico. They used to be deliberative. They used to take this stuff seriously. And then all of a sudden, you know, the House Commerce and Economic Development Committee, they're the ones having a five-hour debate on the constitutionality of the bill. And you've got a progressive down from Albuquerque grilling the bill sponsors on what Ortega v. Grisham actually said versus what the sponsors' expert witnesses said Ortega v. Grisham actually said. That's supposed to be the Senate Judiciary Committee. Instead, that very real, very good debate was happening in the House Commerce and Economic Development Committee. So, like I said, at this point in time, we don't actually have, the public has not seen all the amendments. Speak definitively to what's in there, but I do know that there are some ones, you know, particularly around how the custody of 4473 works, because it's shocking that, you know, the bill could make it this far, the last committee, before that someone actually brings up, hey, by the way, the state just can't go inspect the stuff. These are federal records. You can't just do that.
Yeah. I want to ask you about another comment, and you guys shared this on your X account, the New Mexico Shooting Sports Association, on Monday. This is from the Santa Fe, New Mexican. Miranda Viscoli, Executive Director of New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence, said the organization supports the sponsor's goals for SB 17, but the legislation is, quote, legally vulnerable and likely to backfire. She said, by passing a ban this broad, we are handing the U.S. Supreme Court a perfect opportunity to deliver a definitive nationwide ruling against state-level firearm restrictions. Beyond the legal risk, the bill's immediate effect will likely be a surge in panic buying of the exact weapons this bill is trying to limit. I'm curious, Zach, you know, obviously this is a gun control group, right? And they say they're in favor of the goals of this bill, but they worry about the specifics. Is that likely to have any kind of impact on House Democrats?
It actually likely will. You know, Miranda, there's a good chance Miranda's going to listen to this interview. So thanks for your comments there, Miranda. I've got a lot of respect for you. So really, to kind of address kind of the core concerns they have, and this is something that I think some people were afraid of, but kind of afraid to speak publicly about until Miranda said it, is, you know, New Mexico, we're in the 10th Federal Circuit. No other state in the 10th Circuit has any type of rifle ban. You know, the sponsors of the bills try to make it sound like Colorado does, which Colorado, you know, they have a permit, like a permit to purchase system, which, by the way, hasn't even been implemented yet. Mm-hmm. But nobody else in the 10th Circuit has a rifle ban like was being proposed in Senate Bill 17. So what could potentially happen is, you know, given the very positive ruling for gun owners that we saw in Ortega v. Grisham, which the 10th Circuit denied the en banc appeal on, meaning they let that ruling stand.
This is the waiting period law, right?
This is the waiting period. Yes. Thank you. I realize that your viewers may not be immediately familiar, but Ortega v. Grisham is the lawsuit over New Mexico's 7-day waiting period. So if Senate Bill 17 were to pass in New Mexico, there would be litigation over it. And should the 10th Circuit choose to overturn the law, which, given how they kind of position themselves respecting the Bruin ruling in Ortega v. Grisham, you very likely could see a circuit split on rifle bans in this country if Senate Bill 17 passed. That is a very, there's not a guaranteed outcome by any means, but that is a very likely outcome that you could see a circuit split. What would that mean for all the other states that have rifle bans? Because if you have a circuit split on rifle bans, that's, as getting a circuit split is a good way to get the Supreme Court to pay attention to a case. So if there were to be a circuit split, because the 10th Circuit has never ruled on rifle bans before, nobody else has them, this is actually a far more encompassing ban than some other states that have rifle bans. So if you got that circuit split, you could potentially force the hand of the Supreme Court to take it up, and therefore it could actually finally force them to hear a rifle ban case, which, you know, a lot of gun control advocates are very leery of that happening. So I think that was actually kind of goes to the heart of the concern that the Mexicans Prevent Gun Violence have is, you know, this could potentially be a vehicle to strike down a lot of gun laws nationwide if Senate Bill 17 were to be passed in its current state.
Yeah, because as you say, I mean, it's not just the 10th Circuit, but it is also the all-encompassing nature of SB 17, right? This, if this were to take effect, this would be the broadest gun ban in U.S. history. I mean, this would ban all gas-operated semi-automatic long guns, center-fire long guns, with a, you know, a fixed magazine of more than 10 rounds, and any long gun that can accept a detachable magazine. I mean, this isn't a features test. This isn't banning by make and model. This is essentially banning every semi-automatic long gun on the market.
Yes, effectively. So it's incredibly broad based. And I think that was, there could be some concern, you know, if the, we haven't seen legislators publicly air those concerns, but I do believe they're having some of the behind the scenes. And, you know, just from my observation through this process, typically we see Giffords, another gun control group. They're typically either as a they're as an expert witness on the bill, they're to testify on behalf of the bill. They were not present to testify, to basically support this bill or testify at any single, at any committee hearing that I saw. This is a purely every town bill. It was every town expert witnesses, every town attorneys. I use the kind of term expert witness kind of loosely there for every town. For when they show up to New Mexico, they're not always very truthful about what they're doing. But that we never saw Giffords once show up, which is really unusual because a lot of times Gifford is either the expert witness on the bill or they're there to testify on behalf of it. And I do wonder if that's Gifford's concern about this bill is that, you know, people rush, ram something through in New Mexico, and all of a sudden, a lot of gun control laws they've helped create in other states could be at risk.
Yeah. All right. So as you say, by the time this airs and folks are watching this interview, about 48 hours remain in the session, right? Sine die is noon Mountain Time on Thursday. What should folks be looking for? I mean, I guess the next step again would be, when is the House Judiciary Committee going to meet again, right?
We don't know yet. They could potentially be meeting again today. We're gonna be staying on top of that. There's a lot of amendments. This bill is gonna take a lot of time. And like I said earlier, if this bill is amended and passes the House floor, it's got to go back over to the Senate side. So there's not a lot of time left to go. If it's gonna happen, there's a good chance it's gonna happen today. So we're gonna find out more about that. So if you're in New Mexico, you're paying attention to Mexico, like, follow our social media feeds. We're gonna be putting out stuff there in real time. We're gonna be sending out email alerts on stuff. So the bill is not dead yet. I want to emphasize that. Last night was good for us, but the bill's not dead yet. So we got to keep fighting. We got to stay on top of this. We got about 48 hours left to go. Another bill I do want to bring up really quickly that has been moving is Senate Bill 261. This would ban concealed carry for, because Mexico concealed carry permit holders at polling places. You know, a few years ago, New Mexico banned open carrying at polling places, but there was an exemption for concealed carry permit holders such that they would be able to conceal carry at polling places. You know, Senate Bill 261, it's a big mess of a bill that, you know, it's moving quickly, but there's a lot of stuff in there. So, for instance, not only does it ban concealed carry permit holders from carrying at a polling place, it bans law enforcement from carrying at a polling place unless they're responding to an emergency situation. The bill is kind of being aimed at stopping federal law enforcement from I guess, quote unquote, intimidating voters at polling places.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not an expert in this area. I can't tell you whether or not that state actually can ban federal law enforcement from carrying at polling places. I'll leave that to somebody who's more knowledgeable in that area to kind of make that determination of whether or not they even can do something like that. But kind of getting lumped in there is they're also kind of going back and banning concealed carry permit holders from carrying at polling places. You know, that amendment was hard fought and kind of won. I think it was like a 34-33 vote on the House floor a couple of years ago when we got that amendment tacked on when they're trying to ban all carrying firearms in polling places. So this is something we're continuing to work on. You know, we do have a chance of stopping this bill because we do want to, our interest in the bill is concealed carry permit holders. You know, we're not here to represent, you know, whether or not federal law enforcement can, we'll let somebody else do that. Our interest is allowing concealed carry permit holders to be able to continue concealed carrying polling places. So we're going to continue fighting on this bill. It's moving quickly, but, you know, it's like I said, this is the first, today is its first stop on the House side, in the House Indian Affairs and Government Committee. So that's the first stop on the House side. The Senate kind of rammed it through really quickly. But like we saw in Senate Bill 17, the Senate these days has kind of become this a rubber stamp committee, for lack of a better term. They don't really meaningfully debate bills these days. They just kind of pass whatever they feel like going on through and letting the House sort everything out.
Right. Okay. And you say SB 261, first stop in the House Indian Government Affairs Committee. If it passes out of that committee, does it also have to go to Judiciary?
It would have – no, this bill, apparently it's just being routed to that one committee, and that would go onto the House floor if it would go through there, is what is my understanding of that bill's trajectory right now. So you would think with Senate Bill 17, we got the two committee assignments on the House side that really kind of helped slow things down and kind of to everyone say, like, okay, let's, you know, think about what we're doing here, especially, I mean, even if you like the bill, the idea that they would just be able to go, that the state would be able to go seize these federal records and inspect them at any point in time without a warrant, as you would typically need, is, you know, not right. So slowing the bill down was good for us. And I think it was also, you know, if you care about having, you know, good laws passed, even if you hate guns, if you still have to care about, you know, if government's doing the right thing and kind of actually making sure the laws they pass work, what happened in Senate Bill 17 on the Senate side is just outrageous.
Yeah, there are arguments for even anti-gunners to oppose this bill. Obviously, there are plenty of arguments for gun owners and Second Amendment advocates to oppose SB 17, but as you say, there are arguments that that even anti-gunners should not support this legislation. All right. Well, listen, Zach, again, I appreciate everything you're doing there. Thank you to all the New Mexico gun owners who are listening as well. Honestly, you all are an inspiration and should be an inspiration for gun owners across the country. We're going to be closely watching what happens over the next 48 hours, but fingers crossed that, you know, this is a good sign and that maybe the session can end without this major infringement on our right to keep and bear arms getting to Governor Grisham's desk.
That's what we're going for.
All right, Zach, thanks so much. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks to Zach, and hopefully we'll have some good news to report from New Mexico here in a couple of days. Today is also a big day in Virginia. It's crossover day. So basically, any bill that's introduced that doesn't get out of its house of origin is dead for the session. The bad news is that a lot of bills have already crossed over in Virginia. One bit of good news, though, is that the Senate's permit to purchase bill, Senate Bill 643, was actually stripped of its permit to purchase language on the floor of the Senate on Monday. And instead, a substitute bill was offered. It's still not a great bill. It bans the sale of handguns and so-called assault firearms to adults under the age of 21. In the Commonwealth of Virginia. But all of the language about needing to get a firearms purchase permit from the state police, mandated training, fees, all that nonsense, that's gone from the Senate bill. The Senate bill did pass out. It's over on the House side. But again, the permit to purchase language has been removed. But here's what we know about some of the other bills that are actually still alive. So over on the House side, the Senate bills that have crossed over, in addition to Senate Bill 643, which again has been basically gutted at this point, and all the permit to purchase language removed. You've got the ban on so-called assault firearms and large capacity magazines, Senate Bill 749. Senate Bill 272 limits who can carry firearms at public institutions of higher learning. I will say that practically speaking, that bill is not going to have a huge impact. Campus carry is theoretically allowed in Virginia, but you've got to have the approval of the public institution of higher learning, and as far as I know, none of them actually allow for that. Sorry about that. Should have silenced my phone before I started recording. Senate Bill 727 also prohibits carrying assault firearms in public places, including streets, sidewalks, and parks. Senate Bill 496 makes it a misdemeanor for you to store your handgun in your car where it is visible. Senate Bill 763 imposes an 11% excise tax on the sale of all firearms and ammunition. Now, we've heard that the House bill, the House version of this 11% excise tax, that's basically dead. But again, the Senate bill has already crossed over. So this is still live. It was referred to the Finance Committee last Thursday. Has not seen any action since then. But they may not be in any rush, right, because it's already crossed over. So don't think we're out of the woods yet on this excise tax. Now, over on the Senate side, the House bills that have already crossed over. House Bill 21, this is an attempt to do an end run around the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. It creates these vague and subjective reasonable controls for firearm manufacturers, distributors, sellers, And if you don't meet these vague and undefined reasonable controls, well, you can be sued by the attorney general or a commonwealth's attorney or even a private individual for the actions of a criminal. Let's say you sold a firearm. 2 years later, that gun is stolen. It's used in a commission of a crime. You can be sued for that. You can be sued for the actions of the criminal, even though that gun was lawfully sold, no laws were violated, and it was later stolen. You can still be subject to litigation. House Bill 40 makes it a crime to manufacture firearms without serial numbers. So much for building your home-built guns, right? House Bill 217 is the House version of the ban on assault firearms and large-capacity magazines. There are, I believe, some minor differences between the House and the Senate bill still. So those might need to be rectified, and this bill could end up at a conference committee. I would say at this point, that is the number one priority of the gun control lobby in Virginia, to get that ban on assault firearms and large capacity magazines passed. House Bill 901 expands Virginia's red flag law, and it makes it possible for many other people beyond law enforcement to file for a red flag gun seizure petition. House Bill 110 also deals with keeping a firearm in your vehicle for self-defense. Basically, if you store your gun again where it is visible to somebody, you are subject to a civil penalty of $500 and your car could be towed. So you've got one bill, the Senate bill that's on the House side that makes it a misdemeanor. You've got the House bill that's over on the Senate side that says, it's a civil penalty, but we're going to tow your car if we can see your gun inside. House Bill 871, mandatory storage, basically requires you to keep your firearm on your person unless it is locked up where minors or prohibited persons live in that residence. House Bill 93 requires subjects of protective orders to transfer their firearms to individuals over the age of 21 who don't reside in the same home as that individual. House Bill 916 expands the curriculum requirements for Virginia concealed carry permit classes. We're going to make it more expensive and more time consuming to get that government issued permission slip so you can exercise your right to bear arms. House Bill 1071 requires threat assessment teams for public schools to receive training on the use of red flag orders. So, again, we'll see more red flag petitions filed. House Bill 1524. Very similar to the Senate bill we mentioned earlier, it bans assault firearms in public places, including streets, sidewalks, and parks. House Bill 1525 prohibits the purchase and possession of firearms by legal adults under the age of 21. This is now substantially similar to Senate Bill 643. This does, by the way, apply to existing owners. So you can own a so-called assault firearm today is a 19-year-old, but if these bills become law, you would not be able to buy another until you reach the age of 21. And if Virginia passes their ban on assault firearms, you won't be able to buy one anyway, unless that bill gets thrown out in court. So those are the bills right now that have crossed over, which are, I would say, majority of the gun control bills that have been introduced in Virginia this year. We have seen, again, the demise of the $500 tax on suppressors, the demise of the bill that would have banned recreational shooting on less than 5 acres of land, or at least given localities the option of doing so. But for the most part, you know, these other bills do remain live threats. So, as we've seen with SB 643, it is possible that these bills will be modified and changed dramatically, hopefully for the better, or at least to make them less crummy going forward. But Virginia gun owners, you are not out of the woods by any means. And there's a lot that we're going to have to pay attention to after today and after the crossover deadline. All right. I tell you what, we'll get back to our armed citizen story, our recidivist report, our good deed of the day tomorrow, but we'll leave it with the legislative items today. I will be on Newsmax this afternoon or this evening in the 6 p.m. Eastern hour talking with Carl Higbee for 2A Tuesday. We'd encourage you to check that out. Also encourage you to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest legislation, litigation, regulation, everything having to do with your right to keep and bear arms. We've got you covered there. And if you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. No matter what tier support you choose, use the promo code FIGHT and you can get 60% off your membership. And no matter what tier support you choose, you're going to get some great benefits and you'll also be supporting the work that we're doing at Bearing Arms. And I thank you very much for your support. Have a great rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.